Hey foodies, guess what I have for you today? I have my first two-time guest. That's right, my first ever two-time guest. I've been doing it long enough now, I guess, to have people come back, which is so exciting. My lovely friend Yumna Jawad came back to chat with me. We dug more into her childhood, about her favorite recipes for Mother's Day, how she created her business, and just all around had a good time. So please join me in welcoming the lovely and most incredible Yumna.
One, two.
I realize that you are my first two-time guest ever.
Oh, that's
I
exciting.
know. Little clap for that. I'm like,
Yeah, I'm
wow,
excited.
did I do enough of these or now I have repeats? Like, what's
That's
going on?
great.
But I listened to our previous episode this morning and it was like 30 minutes long, so I have some gaps to fill. I feel like I have some
Okay.
questions for you.
Cool.
Last time I saw you was South Beach, Miami. How was the rest of your trip?
It was great, honestly. It was really fun, and just to be with a lot of different types of influencers. We tend to be with a lot of same type of people who do similar stuff to us, and so it was just fun being with different types of food influencers who are creating a name for themselves and a brand in different ways, So it's
Yeah,
nice.
I do, because that one's so huge. They have so many people, so you feel like you're meeting someone like every 2 seconds. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really cool. How was it for you?
It was good. I was not there as long as I was last year, so I was there for like 24 hours
Okay.
because I had to go to Vegas to for a story,
Oh,
like literally right after. So I was
yeah.
like it was going
Yeah.
crazy, but it was really fun. I got to see so many people that I met last year, and then I just recorded a podcast episode with a chef that I had met there at JJ Johnson's cookout. So it was
Oh.
always worth it. Like I love meeting everyone there, so it's always worth.
Absolutely.
And the food
Yeah.
was insane, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. It was so good.
Yeah.
It
How was your Europe trip too? You just came off
was
of
great. Oh, my
a
gosh. So much fun. My kid's first time there. My daughter was there when she was 6 months old. Of course, doesn't
Oh,
remember
yeah.
anything. So this was really fun. We got to visit three different countries and got to just give the kids the highlights of each of them. And so we had a blast. So much
What
fun.
countries?
We went to, well, we spent in like more cities, like so Amsterdam, Paris, and
I
Brussels.
love.
So,
Okay.
three cities in three different countries. And I think my kid's favorite was biking in Amsterdam because it's just like, it was such a good way to see so much of the city and get from like, if we wanted to have breakfast in one spot and like try croissants in another spot, like 2 miles away from each other, it was like 10 minute bike ride and we're there,
Yeah, and you're
and
working
it's
it
nice.
off in between.
You're working it off in between. They're not like complaining about the walking. They're just on a bike ride and it's a beautiful bike ride wherever you are. So they had so much fun. It was really cool.
I love that. I went last year, I think it was last year now, I don't even know, with my older sister. We saw the tulips in Amsterdam.
Oh, that's so nice.
Is that happening now?
We were 1 week early, so they had just started to pop. But as soon as I came back, I was just seeing like everybody posting about it afterwards, and then they all really bloomed. But we got to be there where it wasn't too busy, and we started to see some of the tulips blooming. It was beautiful.
Oh, good. Yeah,
Loved
yeah. I mean,
it.
that's an excuse to go back for sure.
Absolutely. And I think that like Amsterdam is just doesn't get the hype that it deserves, I feel. Like I used to connect in
No.
Amsterdam on my way to Beirut forever. I've probably been to that airport 15 times, 20 times, and we never thought to actually do a layover and spend a night there. And I told my mom after, I'm like, we've been missing out. Like, we've never been to Amsterdam before. It's our first trip to Amsterdam, and it deserves a trip. Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, every part was great except the red light district. We kind of
We did not make
don't take
it
your
over there.
kids there. You're hopping over.
No. We learned that a coffee shop is not really a coffee shop there. It's one
Oh.
word. Yeah, a coffee cafe is where you would go get coffee, but a coffee shop is one word, and that's where they sell weed. So.
You're taking your kids there. Like, let's go get some
Oh
coffee, guys.
my gosh, thank God. No, somebody told me that before, thank goodness, because we totally would have went into one otherwise.
You would have smelled it. I
We
mean, the
would have
whole
walked in and been like, oh, we're
city.
getting out of here.
They'd be like, Mom, what's that?
Yeah. Now, where do
That's
we want to
funny.
be?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful city. I agree. I think we went to a pancake place. I might have actually, I can't remember what it was called, but it was kind of like underground.
It was pretty cool. It was like in this little area. It was a very narrow restaurant. And the pancakes were delicious. It was, I think I saw it on TikTok. So I'll have to, next time you go, I'll have to like.
Yeah, definitely. You want to go again for sure.
Yeah, because the tulips too, we went to the gardens. So I didn't realize that the gardens were separate from the fields. So you have to like book an entirely different thing if you want to go into the fields, you know, where you see like the vast photos of all of the greenery.
So the garden. You just did the garden next time. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that. We left and I was like, I had an image in my mind and that was,
it was beautiful still, but. Me too. And then I saw it afterwards on, I'm like, what was that trip? And was that something different? I was like, where did they go that we didn't go? You know?
Yeah. That was exactly it. Yeah. I researched that after. I was like, I wish. So I'll just go back.
Makes sense.
All right. So I was looking through your recipes today and I have one that I need to bring up. Your chocolate pudding recipe with hard-boiled eggs. What is going on?
What is going on? You know, every once in a while you see something on TikTok and you question it. You wonder if it's something really weird that you need to try or just kind of ignore it. You know how everybody was doing like balsamic vinegar inside of soda and it was supposed to taste like Coke?
Wait, no.
You never, that was a weird one. That. Yeah, I never ended up trying that one, but people were dropping like a tablespoon of balsamic vinegar and like sparkling water. And then there might have been one other ingredient in there or nothing else. Maybe, I don't know if anything else went in there, but people were saying it tasted like Coke and everybody was obsessed with it. I was like, I don't need to try this. I'm not a pop drinker anyway, so I never tried it. But this one, I saw my friend Natasha's Kitchen share it and I was like, I don't know, man. I love chocolate. And she promised it didn't taste like eggs, so I definitely had to try it. You just throw everything into a blender, as long as you have hard-boiled eggs, which you can buy or you can meal prep a bunch of them. Throw it into a blender for a minute, and I swear it tastes so good. I was shocked. Wow. And it just like, I think the sugar and the cocoa powder just kind of overtake the flavor. And there is eggs usually in like a pudding, you know, it's like one egg usually gets cooked off into like a custard or pudding type of things. So it's not completely unusual, but the hard-boiled egg just gives it this like thick consistency and then protein. So it's like, I think it ends up being 12 grams of protein per serving.
Oh,
which is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I believe you. I believe that it's good.
Yeah.
Because when I first saw it, I was very thrown.
Yeah, exactly. And my son was eating it halfway through eating it. I'm always like experimenting with different things. And lately we've been putting cottage cheese in everything. And so I told my son, there's a healthy ingredient in there. He's like, gosh, why'd you have to put cottage cheese in this? I said, actually, it's not cottage cheese. And so halfway through eating it, I told him it's hard-boiled eggs. He was like, no, no. He's like, but I can't taste it. He goes, even as you're saying it, I can't taste that. How? He was mad. He's like, I wish you didn't tell me. I was really enjoying that. And then just the vision of hard-boiled eggs, like.
Yeah, it is. It's like when you're eating, like, even I get that with chicken too, but also with eggs, when you start thinking about it, it's like, oh, like I can't. Like,
what am I actually eating here? Exactly. And it was so good that I should put it on my website. I've tried some things in the past where like fun TikTok viral things where you'll make it and you're just like, okay, this is just going to be a fun video. But I was like, this actually deserves a spot on my website because we've been trying to do more high protein snacks. And so I threw it on my website too. I'm like, this deserves to be on there.
Yeah, I saw one comment and it was like, who can use leftover eggs in this economy or something?
Oh, yeah. I was like, if you have leftover eggs, they're like, why would anybody have leftover eggs in this economy? Like, we boil one egg, we can only afford one egg. It's like $2 an egg. You eat it, you're done, you're satisfied.
So real. I'm like, as I'm running out of eggs, but that's okay. I've been, maybe people get mad at me, I don't know, but I've been going to Trader Joe's over here, only lets me get one carton you know, like that's the limit. So then I go to Whole Foods and I get another.
Because Whole Foods limit and I think ours is two, is it two or three?
Yeah, it should be two because then I have to go back so often. I eat eggs every day.
Yeah, if you're eating eggs every day or if you have a family, there's no way you can survive on a dozen eggs. No.
Like bye in 3 days, it's gone.
Yeah. And I think people are just keep saying how expensive it is, but I'm like, I know, but at the end of the day, you're eating good protein. It's filling you up. It's better than the price of McDonald's has also gone up, you know, but you're not stopping that.
And you need eggs in mostly anything you eat. So you just have to sometimes got to take it on the chin and just be like, this sucks, but I got to buy it.
Yeah. Suck it up and just buy it.
Yeah. I want to get into the questions, though, I didn't ask you first episode, because we covered a lot of your childhood, I feel like, but I want to dive a little bit deeper into it, because I feel like we didn't really cover your transition from Sierra Leone to the United States when you were younger. And I feel like emotionally and just having to deal with that change and new ways of people speaking and new foods, I want to talk more about how you were able to adapt to the US, if you're willing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when we first came here, the good thing was we did know how to speak English, because I went to a Lebanese international school, but we primarily learned everything in English, and Arabic was like secondary to that. So it helped a lot that I spoke the language, but also I think culturally it was just really different. You know, I came from a town where I knew everybody, and then all of a sudden I was in a classroom where people didn't all live within like 10, 20 minutes from each other. Everybody kind of lived widespread in different parts of the city, and it felt like everyone kind of already knew each other, and I was kind of the outsider. And I felt really just like excluded from everybody, if you will. And I think people were really nice at the time. I came when I was in fourth grade for like 3 months, when there was some kind of a civil war happening in Sierra Leone. And right. So we came for 3 months, and then we ended up going back. And then I came 2 years later when that civil war happened again. We also thought it was going to be temporary, and it ended up just becoming permanent, and we ended up staying here. So ever since, you know, I was in sixth grade, and at the time in sixth grade, like middle school years are awkward as it is. And I am, this new kid who doesn't really know, like, is not dressed the way everybody else is dressed. Like, I don't know about the music that everybody knows about, the cool foods that everybody's eating. I mean, my mom was literally still packing me Lebanese sandwiches, which is like cream cheese. Well, Lebanese is like trendy now and cool. Like,
yeah,
it was like, it was like labneh on pita with za'atar, which za'atar looks like dirt. And the kids in my classroom would be like, what is that? Like, is there dirt on your food? I'm like, no, it's za'atar. And they're like, what's za'atar? Why are you saying, what's the tar? And, you know, so it just felt like it was really hard. And middle school's hard as it is. And to have all of these new experiences, you know, as a 13-year-old, like it, or 12 or 13-year-old, it just felt like I wasn't going to acclimate. And I think what helped acclimate mostly is just like watching Saved by the Bell and starting to go to like Red Robin and TGIF and go to the mall and just slowly starting to like, you know, buy some of the things and, you know, eat some of the foods and things like that. And it took a while, but I ended up finding my community, and I ended up finding, it took a few years to finally found those people that I felt home with, but it ended up being a lot of, you know, Middle Eastern or ethnic people who, you know, whose parents maybe came here, or they came when they were younger or something like that, or just understood like the idea of having really strict parents or having really strict guidelines, or just kind of growing up in just a different mentality. So it was tough, but I think it was encouraging to have really friendly people around me who were, you know, they thought I was an anomaly. They're like, oh, how did you live in Africa? Did you like live in a hut? I'm like, no, we just had a regular house. Like, you know, like, but you know, they were interested. And
that's a lack of education too.
Yeah. There was a lot of that, you know, with, you know, dealing with 12-year-old kids, but for the most part, everybody was really friendly, which helped me acclimate to the new classroom and environment.
When you were kind of assimilating more to here, were you still hopeful that you were going to go back, or you knew that like that wasn't going to happen?
Yes, we were actually, because we went back the first time we came. So I always thought it was temporary and I would go back.
Right.
And then I think once the year mark passed, we thought, okay, we might be staying here. And we ended up moving from one apartment to another apartment. And my mom was like, I don't know, it's taking a little bit longer. And then I think at the 2 year mark, I was like, I don't think we're going back. And my mom was like, no, we're not going back at that point. And so at that point I was in eighth grade, and we just started feeling like, okay, this is going to be our new home. And what made it feel a little bit less daunting was that we had some cousins there, you know, and then we went straight to Dearborn, Michigan, which had a big Lebanese community. So I was like, oh, these people also speak Arabic, or these people's moms also really like mean, and they're not allowed to have sleepovers either. Like my mom's not, like, you know, whereas like my daughter right now growing up, it's weird that she's not allowed to have sleepovers. Like most of the kids,
I wasn't either.
Yeah. And there's very few parents that don't allow that nowadays. When I went to school, because it was a big Arab community, by the time I got to high school, it was normal. Like, oh, nobody was allowed. So within the Arab community, especially. And yeah, just having some cousins there helped a lot too, because they would teach us things. Like, I remember my first Halloween, you know, my cousin who was like 3 or 4 years older than me was like, well, here's what to wear and here's what you have to do. And just, I just still remember like walking with her and just looking at her. And she was probably in 8th grade at the time. I was in 6th grade. And I'm just like, this is so cool that you get to do this. And they kind of told, and then her mom would invite us over for Thanksgiving and would explain to us like, this is what they do on Thanksgiving and this is what we eat. And so it was kind of nice. And then the following year I thought, okay, this is really cool because we had our own traditions in Africa. And it was really cool to just assimilate to these traditions. And I was always such a foodie. So I just loved all the food traditions too in the US. I was like, this is so cool because Easter revolves around eggs and Thanksgiving's around turkey and Halloween is like, you know, pumpkins. And I just loved how food was incorporated in so many of the holidays here. And it ended up making me feel fun and easy to, you know, learn about them.
When they were teaching you about Halloween and Thanksgiving, did you feel like you were kind of losing your identity through that? Or did you feel like it was kind of half and half, like you can appreciate
that? Yeah, I feel like I really wanted to assimilate really badly. And I really was like, I don't speak Arabic anymore. I don't want to speak Arabic. My mom would make like a traditional like stuffed grape leaves or something for dinner. And I'd be like, oh, but can you make, you know, so-and-so, like, can you make hamburgers tonight? Like, I know you made it like a month ago and can you make it again? And can you make hot dogs? And I really wanted to fit in and I wanted to experience more of that. And I think it wasn't until like end of high school, early college, where I started to feel like, wait a minute, I don't want to lose touch with that. And I made a conscious decision to speak to my mom in Arabic only. I was like, you know what? I don't want to lose the language because we've been here for a few years now. And yeah, I hear it, my mom saying it all the time, but I always responded to her in English. And I made a decision to say, okay, from now on, I will respond to her in Arabic, because otherwise, who am I going to speak Arabic to? I'm going to lose this language. And then going to University of Michigan, you realize, I mean, it's a huge campus and you have people coming in from China and from Turkey and from, you know, like all over the world. And everybody is like so proud of where they come from. And you start to find there's the Lebanese Student Association and there's a Persian Student Association and everyone is so proud of their culture. And it like made me go back to like, you know, my beginnings and like my grassroots and thinking about like, oh, this is really cool. Like we're going to teach people how to do a depke, which is something, a dance that I grew up with. And,
oh,
and you just become more proud again. And then it was through college where I started feeling like, okay, I need to be proud of both. Like I'm American, but I'm also Lebanese. And how do I bring those two worlds together? And it wasn't until many, many years later that like my cuisine also now like really embrace both of those. Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. In middle school, the stark differences are just so apparent.
I mean,
everyone's worried about themselves. We're all insecure. We're all growing and changing. And then you're thinking about what other people are thinking about. And then it's just a whole entire whirlwind. So getting placed into an entirely new community, even if you had your cousins to help you out a little bit, it still is like a culture shock, because you're like, what am I supposed to do? I'm already having trouble fitting in. And now it's like, I actually have to worry about where I'm from. And then they're hounding you with questions. And honestly, I think middle school kids are more just curious too, because they don't know what's Africa to them. It's this mm-hmm. foreign concept.
Absolutely.
And then when you get to college, it's celebrating those differences and you can kind of embrace things a little bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you summarize it so well. I think that's, and I think that regardless whether I had just moved here in sixth grade or not, I feel like looking back at it, it's the same story that like my kids are even going through. Like my daughter in sixth grade, and even my son now is in sixth grade. So it's interesting thinking about him being in sixth grade, like, oh, this is the age that I was at when I came here. And I look at him,
yeah,
and he's still like trying to fit in.
It's a baby.
Yeah. And he's still a baby and he's still trying to figure things out and he's trying to be cool and like, oh no, we don't say those words anymore. We don't dress like that anymore. We don't wear, like, he's trying to find his space as well. And he's trying to figure out like what he wants to be. And it was interesting is like a couple years ago, I would try to speak to him in Arabic and he would be like, oh, you're speaking to me in gibberish again. And I don't want that gibberish language. And now he's like, wait a minute. I think because some kids at school started asking him about it. Like he was fasting for Ramadan for the first time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As a 12-year-old kid, which I was so proud of him to do that. And and people were asking him, like, why aren't you eating lunch? And he was talking about it. And, you know, at first he was shy. And then the more kids that started asking about it and telling him, like, that's so cool. Like, you literally are going 14 hours without eating. Like, he became proud of it. And he would come home and say, wow, like, how do you say this in Arabic? And I would tell him, and I was like, why are you asking? And he said, oh, because, you know, so-and-so asked me and I want to be able to respond. And how do you say this too? And so you slowly start to see them, you know, shy away from that and then come back to it. And I think everybody goes through that, whatever your identity is. Like you could be, you know, whatever that is, like you end up kind of rejecting a piece of yourself at some point in your life. And then you come back to it and you just, you know, whether it's like your roots with your parents, your ethnicity, like something that you love to do that you don't want to do anymore, you come back to. So it's interesting seeing my kids kind of going through that. And I'm like, well, they're still kind of going through a culture shock, I feel, because every time they meet new friends, every time they get exposed to something different, it still feels like they're trying to fit in and trying to find their foundation.
Yeah. I mean, that'll never go away, but it's great to hear that it's more conducive now, that people are more accepting of everything and actually want to learn. I just feel like through social media and just through all of this activism that we've seen, people are so willing to be like, what's that? What's that? What's that? And step outside of themselves. Even if you just live in a small community for your entire life, you could still see your recipes and other people's recipes and be like, whoa, there's so much out there that's totally beyond me. And you can learn from cookbooks and things like that. So that's so cute that he was able to incorporate his culture a little bit.
Absolutely. And it makes me really proud to see that he's proud of it too.
And now ever since you said the sleepover thing, now I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, I get it though, because I wasn't allowed to do sleepovers either when I was younger. So my neighbor would always throw these sleepover parties and we would watch Pretty Little Liars or whatever was going on at the whatever show. And I would have to leave early. And then the next day I would go to school and all my friends would talk about the jokes they had from throughout the night and all of these things I was missing out on. But now as an adult, I'm like, all of the stuff I see that happens and all of this craziness, I'm like, I really understand where my mother was coming from. Even though it sucked at the time, but I get it.
Absolutely. I know I had some friends, my daughter's friends had invited her when she was maybe like 7 or 8 years old to a sleepover. And I said, no, absolutely not. And sorry, we don't do that. And they stopped being friends with her. And we moved away from where we were living at the time. Now we don't live there anymore. But at the time, like they stopped like hanging out with her and they stopped. And I'm like, that's just sad. And so, you know, and it hurts her, but now she looks back at it and she's like, well, I mean, they weren't real friends to begin with then. Like, they just wanted, you know.
Yeah, exactly. If you just can't sleep over and they're not going to be friends with you, that's ridiculous.
Exactly. And so she was like mad at the time and like so unfair. And I can't believe you did this to me. And now, I mean, she's 14 years old and slowly like, okay, I get where you're coming from. And I'm like, gosh, you get it at 14, which is great. Because
14 is crazy.
Which is great that you get this, because we'll see what happens in high school too, because she hasn't gotten many invites. So we're like, we'll see. Like if they start up again in high school, then maybe she'll start getting mad at me again.
But what age are you going to let her? What age?
We told her when she gets married, she can never. Like when you go away to college, you can have a sleepover like in your dorm with your friends. That's about it. That's when I was allowed. I finally got away. I went to college and that's when like, but at that point you're like, I don't want to sleep over anybody's like your dorm room. It's like,
Literally. I'm like, I love my bed. I want to go home.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to be in my bed.
Yeah, I get that too. I'm like, I can't sleep on the floor at these people's places anymore.
No, absolutely not. Exactly.
Was there a distinct memory you had of cooking when you were in your earlier years and just starting out and you were like, okay, this might actually be my thing?
Not too much, because I think when I lived in Africa, it was more me just watching my mom do it and being overwhelmed by the whole process and just feeling like, oh my gosh, she is some kind of magician, being able to like whip up a healthy meal for us for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And she was always in the kitchen doing something. It always smelled so good in our kitchen, like all the smell of garlic and rose water and parsley and anything, like just all these smells. And so I just basically started like helping my mom like rolling grape leaves, and I was very neat and just very organized the way I did things. So one day my mom was like, come here, I'm going to teach you how to do this. I think you'd be good at it. And it's such a tedious job. So it's good for like a 10-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid to help with that. So she's like, do this and then you do this. And she showed me how to roll the grape leaves. And so I think that was, you know, the first like memory I had where I really helped my mom in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then after that, she's like, oh my gosh, you're so neat the way you do things. Can you help me, like, so-and-so's coming over, put together a fruit platter, and I would make it like symmetrical with the strawberries around and different shapes. And so I did a lot of that. And then as I started getting older in my teenage years and in high school, I would, and then when I went away to college, I'd come home on weekends sometimes. My mom would say, you know, you need to learn how to cook soon. And I said, nope, when I get married, one day I'll learn. And I always refused. And, you know, I would have like, I would make sandwiches, I would like build things, but I never cooked anything. And it wasn't until I finally got married where I was like, I really need to learn how to cook. Like, why did I procrastinate this whole time? And so that's when I finally first started. So I was like 25 years old when I actually first cooked something.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, good for you.
So long. And yeah, before that, I was like, I was always like the sandwich maker and like
surviving,
Yeah, that's what I did. Yeah. Maybe I fried an egg or two, but my dad was always like really good at frying eggs for me. So I would have him like, Dad, can you fry me some eggs? Or, you know,
I was going to ask that. I was saying, was your dad cooking it too? Because you have a brother as well, right?
Yeah. I have a brother. And then my dad is an excellent cook as well. And he, you know, my mom is more like follows like the guidelines of like how to make a recipe and like kind of does it in a very structured way. Whereas my dad is like, we're going to throw this in there and this in there. And he's just more creative. He makes a big mess. But in the end, he just has these amazing meals. So both of my parents were actually amazing in the kitchen. But because my dad still lives in Africa, they're still married. My dad lives in Africa, though, and works here. My mom lives here. So it was just easier to learn from my mom. And so a lot of what I ended up learning when I started my food blog was through my mom. So I just call her up. It was just easier. I'd come home from work at 5 p.m. My dad was already asleep. And I would say, hey, how do you make rice? How do you make this like lentil soup? And how do you make this fattoush salad? And so little by little, she started teaching me.
So your dad is still in Africa now, or is he in the U.S.? Okay. Do you have you gone back?
I've never gone back. No. And so he lives in a different country now than where we grew up. We grew up in Sierra Leone, and right now he's in Angola. So he lives in another country, and he's basically a diamond dealer, and that's what he works in. And he's always diamonds, and that's all he knows, and that's where his passion is. And so he's like, how do I do that in the U.S.? I can't. Like, there, it's just the whole industry. And so that's what he does.
Wow. How interesting. What an interesting job. Has he come to visit here?
Yeah, he comes to visit like 3 times a year. He's always
there. Okay.
He comes often. He'll come like around the holidays and spend like a month here. He'll come usually around in the summertime and spend another month. And then my mom will try to get him another trip. Like, you know, I had a baby, like you need to come meet your new granddaughter, or like something like, oh, we're having this thing or whatever. So he'll end up coming like a third time for something random. Like, you know, there's always something he ends up coming for, but at least 2 trips a year, which is really nice because when he's here, we end up spending a lot of time together. And now it's different too, because I have my kids. And so it's like, he's spending time with us plus his grandkids.
Yeah, he's grandpa now, which is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
That's good, because I was wondering if like he maybe didn't come back at all or something, because I was like, that would be so tough.
Oh, it would be so tough. And my mom has gone back and visited, but we never have. It's such a long trip to get there, and there's not much to do there, like where he is. He's like, you guys would get bored here. So we end up meeting in Lebanon most of the time, because Africa to Lebanon is like, might still be like 12 hours. And for us to get there too, it's about like 17 hours with layovers. And so we end up like our meeting spot a lot of time ends up being Beirut. So
That's a long flight though.
It's still long for both of us. Yeah. And then for him even just to come from Africa, I mean, he always has to, he has to stay in Europe to just cut the trip in half. Like he'll go spend a couple of days there. He has, you know, partners and people that he knows in Belgium, because there's a big diamond industry there. He hangs out there, and then he comes, finishes off the trip. It's such a long like trip, you know, to come.
Yeah. Being a diamond dealer, that's such an interesting job.
It's really cool. Yeah,
I would be like, can you get me a necklace? Can you get me?
exactly. I know. It's like when I got married, that's what my diamond was. My dad got me the diamond, and like my husband still paid for it, but he was like, I'm getting the diamond. And it's like, of course you are, like you have to. And then we're able to get it at such a better price. And it's like appraised at double the value that it actually, you know, is. And I actually started my own, company to sell diamonds. Yeah.
You did?
I did, yeah. And I started it when I was like 26 years old. And I was in marketing at the time. And the CEO of this, the CIO, Chief Information Officer, I had like, we had mentors at this company that I was with. And so the mentor that I had, you know, we started talking about my childhood and things like that. And what do your parents do? And he was like, this is so fascinating. We should start a company together. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, what do I do?
15-year-old man. And I'm this 26-year-old female and just like, let's do it. And I told my dad, and he's like, why not? And so we ended up starting this company together where we would source the diamonds and sell them online. And he was like, oh, I've got a lot of rich friends. And he's older and just like established. And he was like, I'm going to bring all kinds of clients. And he's like, you just have to supply the diamonds. And at the time, my friends were starting to get married because I was in my mid-20s.
Right.
They were all starting to get married. They saw my diamond. And so I ended up getting like 7 orders or something like that from friends.
Okay.
Ended up not getting any orders. And so like, the whole point was I supply the diamonds, you bring the customers. And we realized it wasn't a good business plan that we had because people want to see the diamond, you know, to purchase it. And it's really hard to sell diamonds online. You know, like you're basically just trusting that like it's going to be this, 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 and this, and you're not going to see it until after you buy it, you know? And my friends trusted me and they were all more than happy with the diamonds they got.
Yeah, but it's such a big purchase that making it online, that's to trust whoever.
So we tried it for about 18 months or so. We made good money for those like 18 months. Everybody was happy. And then we ended up shutting it down.
So how long were you in marketing?
I was in marketing. So I went to school I studied marketing at University of Michigan Business School. Yeah. So I studied marketing there. And then I basically got out of school and I went into this like managerial rotation program for 10 months where I got to learn a little bit about everything at the company. And from then on, I did marketing for about 10 years through there and then a couple of different companies.
No wonder your blog took off so well. Yeah. You know how to market.
And what's interesting is I basically did market research, consumer marketing, and then I did advertising. I did like in-store retail marketing. So by the time I was like 30 years old, I had done like so many different types of marketing. And I was like, you know, the one thing I don't know a lot about is digital marketing. Like I've learned so much about these different things. And at the time I thought when I grow up, I'm going to be a chief marketing officer of a Fortune 100 company. Like that was my dream brand. I was like, I want to be a chief marketing officer and this is my goal and this is what I'm going to do. And so, you know, in my 30s, I was like, okay, late 20s, early 30s, I was like, okay, I have all these different things, but I know nothing about digital marketing. And there's this new thing like social media marketing. You know, what is that all about? And so when I got my own account, I think I was about 30 years. Yeah, I think when I got Instagram, it was 12 years ago. And so when I started Instagram, I was thinking, let me learn about it and see how people are using it, how brands are using it. But let me just get on there and start to use it myself. I can be the brand, but also learn what brands are doing. So it was just a very interesting experiment and it was supposed to be temporary. And I was supposed to learn all about digital marketing at the time, which I didn't, social media marketing wasn't even a thing.
No, you're really ahead of the curve on that for sure.
I called it digital marketing. I was like, this is what I'm going to learn next. And it's going to be, and I thought digital marketing was like banner ads, you know, and like ads that show up on your website. And that's all I thought it was. And then I was like, well, how are people using marketing through Instagram? Are they like, how can, you know, people do that? And at the time when I first started, the way I started seeing companies doing it was like, hey, I'm going to send you some free yogurt. And can you like share about it? I'm like, that's cool. And
yeah, it's that's all free though.
Like, yeah, it's all free. I'm like, I'm getting free yogurt and look what I'm doing with it. That's really smart of this company. And I started just learning more about it that way. And so when I started thinking about marketing my own brand, there was so much experience from doing all the different types of.
Yeah. Do you remember your first blog post?
My first one was probably the first post I ever did was like I was out at a restaurant actually, and I had like a chocolate torte, And you go back all the way to July 17, 2013. And that was like my first post. And it was like, oh, I just had this. And what I used to do at the time was I wanted to learn about nutrition and I wanted to learn about healthier eating through publicly learning how to cook. And so I had like, you know, thinking back at it, I was like, well, I actually had a lot of different ideas of what I was thinking about doing. I'm like, I want to learn about digital marketing. I want to learn how to cook. And I also want to teach people what I'm learning. And so my first post talked about like the importance of chocolate and like why chocolate is actually good for you.
Yes.
And
I love that.
Like a chocolate tour that I had at a restaurant.
Oh my gosh. So, I love that.
Yeah. And so then for like 10 posts after that, I just kept sharing, oh, I just made this like, you know, smoothie. And in the smoothie, there was some strawberries in it. And you know, strawberries have more vitamin C than oranges. And I would just say these facts. And then people were like, well, what's the recipe? And I'm like, you want the recipe? Like there's food websites out there that have recipes. Like I'm not a recipe developer. Yeah. I don't know anything about this. And so it was really weird at the time where people were asking me for recipes because I didn't know that I could give it to, you know, and I'm like, oh, I just mix this and this together. And then I think one of the first ones I was really surprised about was when I shared oatmeal and it just looked so creamy and delicious. And people were like, well, how do you make oatmeal? I'm like, are you serious? Yeah. How to make it on the box.
On the box.
No, but yours looks so good. Like, how did you make your oatmeal? And that's when I was like, I'm going to share a recipe. And at the time I would just share them in the comments because I thought blogs were dead. I was like, nobody goes to blogs anymore. Websites are dying. And it wasn't until like 4 years later that I ended up, or 3 years later, I ended up starting a website. And one of the first things I put on there was how to make oatmeal, which till this day, if you Google how to make oatmeal,
my the recipe. First one.
Yeah.
That's iconic of you.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like early on though, you were so driven and motivated. Was there any self-doubt there where you were like, I probably can't make this a full-time thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think I knew it was going to be a full-time thing for a very long time because when I first started, I was just having fun with it and nobody questioned anything. Everyone just thought, oh, like, it's really cute. She has her Yumna personal page. And then she has this cute thing called Feel Good Foodie where she shares like some recipes that she's doing. Then I think 2 years after doing that, I started getting like the free yogurts and then somebody paid me 100, then somebody paid me 500. And then it just kept going up from there. You know, so then I would like my family, my sisters would see me on my phone all the time and everything was on my phone. And I started going up to like 5, 6, 7 recipes. And then I started making other accounts as well, because I started realizing that advertisers wanted to pay you to be on there. And so I started another account where I could kind of like spam it and post ads for other people while still keeping the integrity of Feel Good Foodie. And so my family would see me on there and they're like, I mean, you've been on your phone like literally all day. And
was this an iPhone 13 at the time?
It was probably like an iPhone 8,
yeah,
like, or 7 or 6 even at the time. And so they're like, what are you doing? And I remember Instagram would only allow you to have one account. So I actually had 3 phones at one point where just carried like 3 phones on me. And I had these other accounts. And one of them actually got sold to a really, really big publisher now. Where I sold it, it got to like 3 million followers and I sold it to a really big publisher.
Oh, whoa.
And I was able to get rid of it. Yeah. But at the time people were like, my family was like, okay, so how much money did you make today? Or how much money did you make this week? I'm like, I made $150 this week. And they're like,
from what?
It's not worth it. I'm like, of course it's not worth it. And I still was working part time, you know, as like, through my marketing jobs. I always kind of like, when I started having my kids, I started just keeping working part-time and just kind of doing this on the side. But they would see me on weekends and I would just be on my phone a lot, like posting and whatnot. And I had a lot of self-doubt because I was like, I feel like there's something here though. I don't know what it is, but there's something here.
Like
I'm supposed to be doing this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kept thinking that like something, an opportunity would come to me where like a brand would find me and I would like build this like really cool company out of it. And I never imagined it would be this. Like, I just thought like something will happen. Like I'm meant to do this and learn something out of it. And then it wasn't until like 2018, I think, where I was like, oh, this is full time. Like this is my job now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's something you could tell yourself then just starting out, maybe like a piece of advice, what would it be?
I think it would be like trying just to keep going without having to worry about it being perfect. I'd actually started my website 3 or 4 months before I ended up posting any content on it. But I was tinkering around with the logo for literally 3 months and I wanted everything to be perfect.
That's before so me.
Yeah. And who cares though, just start and figure things out. And I think I think I would tell myself, like, it's okay not to have all the answers, because I really kept struggling. Like, I don't know, but should I keep doing this? Like, why am I doing this? What's the point if I just made $200 this week? Like, I'm making more money than that in my full-time job. And so I think it's okay to trust your instincts and not to have everything be perfect, but just to keep like chugging away at it. Like, whatever that instinct feels, trust it and keep moving.
Yeah. I was just talking to another writer and we were just talking about the process of writing too. And she was like, Olivia, just get it down on the paper. Stop rereading and perfecting everything before. It's going to take you forever. And I'm like, no, but I have to.
I know. Exactly. And it's just like, let it go and just let go of the like, it's okay if it's imperfect to start with and just keep it moving. And I think about that now too. I started my own company called Oath 2 years ago.
Yes. And I know that one.
It's been really slow and steady. And I'm just like, do I give up on it? Like, oats have carbs. Like, is that good for you? Like, people don't want carbs now, but oats are, I mean, I eat them literally 5 days a week and I still believe they're such a good food for you. There's just something I truly believe in that brand so much. And as little, I'm not making any money. I'm like losing money at the point, you know, where it's just like putting so much money in investments. And, you know, and there's a lot of doubt too, where people around me are like, maybe you should, like, do you sell it? Maybe you should get a partner. Maybe you should do other things. And I keep thinking, no, I want to stick with it. There's something here, you know? So I'm like, I'm going to trust my instinct. There's something really strong here. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a very slow and steady growth, but something will happen and eventually. And I believe I need to stick with it.
That's tough when you have to accept that it's going to be a slow and steady growth, just because there's so many overnight successes now, or you see so many fast-paced companies doing really well, like Poppy, like the soda brand or something is a good example. Like, they skyrocketed really fast. And so when you have to sit down and look at the numbers and be like, okay, you know, this isn't what I wanted immediately, but I think I could still get this in the future. You have to just contemplate in your head, like, what's worth your time and energy. And it's tough to make that decision, because you want everything to succeed. Obviously, who wouldn't?
Yeah. And you can have a lot of pride too. Like, you don't want things to fail, and you don't want things. But people fail 1,000 times before something brilliant works, and companies fail all the time. So it's really tough to sometimes think about it. Like, is it too much pride, or is there something really good here? You know, I go back and forth on that all the time.
Ego versus. I'm like, oh.
And you would think, oh, after 2 years, like with the success that I have on social media, with everything else that I've started, like, I stuck with it and I was able to get it to where I want it to be. And so it's really tough to see this. I'm like, oh man, it's just slow. And, you know, we need to get into retail stores and we need to do more with it.
You should be in retail stores for sure.
Yeah, we are in 130 stores.
Oh.
We just need to get more stores.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What stores? Yeah. Like, are you in Whole Foods?
We're only in one brand right now. It's Hy-Vee.
Oh, yeah.
It's Hy-Vee.
The Midwest. Yeah.
It's in the Midwest, and they have 100, we're in 130 of their stores, which is great. I mean, people, it's getting a lot of traction in the stores, and we've gotten many reorders, but it's just, how do we get more of that? How do we get into more stores? And so it's very slow. And you actually want to grow slowly. You don't want to just balloon, go crazy. Sometimes, like, that can actually make you, the faster you like rise, the faster you fall sometimes.
Yeah. Put all your eggs, or your hard boiled eggs that we talked about earlier, in one basket.
Exactly.
All right. So Mother's Day is coming up. What's your go-to brunch recipe that's always a big hit?
People love my French toast casserole, the overnight French toast casserole.
I had a feeling it was French toast related. I just telepathy.
Yeah, so good. And I actually have a version of it in my cookbook where, I mean, really it's overnight French toast. You've kind of got like the formula down, and there's like same amount of eggs, same amount of like liquid, etc. And so in the book, I switch out milk to orange juice, for example, to get it something more brighter. And instead of adding like bananas, I might, you know, in the book I have like pistachios and dates, for example, just to give it a Mediterranean feel. But I love a good French toast, especially an overnight one, because you can soak the bread the night before, get it all done, you just pop it in the oven. And I don't expect moms to do it, but this is something really easy that kids can do it too, or husbands can do it. So telling my husband, like, here's some bread. Like, we always end up out for Mother's Day, but it's really nice to be able to do something like that and prepare something the night before and pop it in the oven.
I was going to say, I hope you're not doing it yourself.
No.
Take a break.
No, not this year. Exactly. Not ever. Any year. I'm like, this is one day I don't cook. Even if we like have to take out whatever it is. My husband always takes care of it.
So. Okay, good, good. Because I'm like, you literally, cooking is your life. So.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. That's how I keep it. That's how I keep it fun. I only cook 3 days a week. I try to really limit it to 3 days a week. So when I'm in the kitchen, I'm really excited to be there. And a lot of the creativity comes in. It doesn't feel like I'm always in there. I mean, I'll fry eggs really quickly, like in the morning or after my workout. But to really cook a meal, it's like Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Okay, smart.
And unless I'm, yeah, and unless I'm entertaining on weekend, like then I'll bring in some help and we can like cook together and do a big thing. But most of the time it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
I just made those chocolate Dubai date bars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. I love dates.
I love them. Yes, yeah. I like it too. I think there's that, like, I love pistachio everything. And I'm just so happy that pistachios are having a moment. And I love date everything too. So I love that dates are having a moment too. I'm all about them. Like, keep them going.
I was just on this brand trip in Texas and they were showing, we were meeting like the reps for Nature's Medjool dates. It was another
date. Oh, yeah.
And we had so many dates that day. I was like, I literally never want to look at one again. But now I think I had a few weeks where I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Now
I'm ready to go back again. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Have you tried the little date Snickers?
No, we didn't make those. I should.
Oh, those are really good. Because you just stuff dates with peanut butter and then you can put like actual peanuts in there or almonds.
Okay.
And then you dip them in chocolate.
Oh, and then you put it in the fridge or a freezer?
Yeah, let it like harden a little bit. And I mean, I don't think it tastes like Snickers, but it really, I think it's better. I'm not a Snickers person.
Me either.
I don't know. There's just something about, I love dates and chocolate, and it's just the ultimate sweet and salty texture, caramelly texture. It's really good.
Oh, okay. I'll totally make that. Yeah, we made oatmeal date bars and then the Dubai chocolate date bars.
Oh, okay, nice.
So, then we were snacking in between. So I was like, this is a some sort of sugar high. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, it's good sugar, right? Even if it's like 28 grams of like sugar per day, it's like, it's fine. It's good sugar.
No, it's healthy. Yeah.
It's healthy.
All right. So I have a short game for you if you're up for it to wrap
this
up. Okay, cool. So I'm going to pin some popular foods against each other and then you can tell me which one you like more.
Okay.
Okay, cool. First one, which is on theme with our previous conversation, French toast versus pancakes.
French toast.
I agree. I love French toast. Yeah. The second one, Dubai chocolate bars versus chocolate baked oats.
Dubai chocolate bar.
I'm surprised by that. I thought you were going to pick the oats.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I'm still obsessed with the trend. I really am. That like crunch, that like the pistachios, I'm obsessed with it.
Third one, pita bread versus olive bread.
Ooh, pita bread.
Me too. Okay, I'm introducing a third option in that, focaccia. Focaccia first.
Oh, I still have to stay true to my Lebanese core, Lebanese pita.
That's where my Italian goes, focaccia.
Oh, focaccia. I know, I love a good focaccia. And I make good focaccia too. It's like, oh, so good.
Me too. All right, fourth one, falafel versus shawarma.
Ooh, shawarma.
Yeah, I totally did not say that the way you said that, but.
Shawarma. And falafel is how we would say too. But whenever I say falafel, people are like, what is that? What are you saying? What word is that? Like, it just sounds like a different word altogether.
Okay, we'll go with her version. Go with Yumna's. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming back on. This was so fun. And I'm glad I got to dive in a little bit further into your life and all of your good things that how you have them.
Yeah, thank you so much, Olivia. This was so much fun. Thank you for having me on as a second time. And we'll in a year or so we'll do a third show too.
I know. Last time it was I think May. How are you feeling after your cookbook fell off? Or
it feels
done.
Yeah.
Not fell off.
If it's done, I know. I felt like I had no identity after. I was like, what do I do with myself now? It's just like so much time promoting it and working on the recipes. And there was always a deadline after another and just being done with it. It just felt like the most amazing accomplishment I've ever done in my life. I mean,
it is
so much was poured into that. And I was like, oh, but I can breathe now. It's out in the world. And you know, I get that question daily. Do you have a cookbook? And now I'm like, yes, I do. Yep. It's right there. It's all over. And so it's so fun having it. People are loving it. It's got amazing reviews. It became a national bestseller, which I'm really proud of it.
Wow, so good for you.
It's really good. Yeah. And now it's almost the 1-year anniversary. So We're planning some fun things and giveaways and also a local party here in Grand Rapids. So it's going to be good.
Wait, that's so fun. Okay. Yeah. Are you working on a second one or are you like, I'm tapped out?
I am tapped out for now. Yeah. And I want people, I also feel like this is a classic book that'll just always be like this like legacy book that people can always come back to. It's the kind of recipes that aren't really trendy. I mean, there's like baked feta pasta in there that feels trendy. But I think it's no longer a trendy recipe. I think that's like a classic recipe now that people can just make on repeat. So the book just feels like it's the kind of thing that you can just, you know, open it up and make something for dinner on any given week. So I'm really proud of it. And I feel like I need something bigger and better to top it. And I can't think of anything right now. It's just like, it's everything to me.
Take your time. And like, unless you have that amazing idea, just let it be. Yeah, it's an amazing cookbook.
Exactly.
Literally was a bestseller, so you're fine.
Exactly. I know. I'm like, it is what it is. It's a bestseller, and it's just like, let's just, you know, enjoy it. And you know, and I'm still pushing it as well and talking about it, which feels
as you
really
should
fun, so.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey, fellow foodies, thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.